You're listening to Booth Talk from the After Movie Diner. And this episode, we're very pleased to present a conversation with special effects person and makeup designer from Evil Dead 1, Tom Sullivan. I'm very pleased to welcome into the diner Mr. Tom Sullivan, artist, makeup effects person, stop-motion animator, and basically one-stop arts and effects person for Evil Dead 1. Thank you, sir, so much for doing this and for coming on the show.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
How did you come to work on Evil Dead 1? I know you also did Within the Woods. Had you worked on any of the other Super 8s beforehand?
Yeah, when I met Sam... they were at MSU, Michigan State University, here in Lansing, Michigan. And they were in the middle of It's Murder, a feature-length Super 8 mystery comedy with Sam and Scott Spiegel. It's there's been a murder, and a detective is trying to sort it all out. And I did some sound effects. I could make the sound of a poison pill dropping into water. Whoop. Kind of like that. And so that made it. And then I also did a little poster for a little flyer, you know, to help promote it on campus when they finally premiered it.
Yeah.
And at the premiere, one person showed up. And so that was
all
that.
Right.
And the rest of the history. Yeah, they didn't really make money, but he sure made a lot of them.
Okay.
Around 40 from what I've heard. And not until they got to college and Sam and his brother Ivan found out that if you lived on campus, students could get a deal renting auditoriums for, you know, to help promote student-led activities. So they'd rent a little theater, and he would set up a Super 8 projector and show the movies he'd made during high school, and usually make enough to pay for the room and maybe a pizza afterwards.
Right.
And so that was the limit of their money making. And then they got the idea, well, at that time, a pretty solid plan for getting into movies was make a horror film, because back in those days with drive-ins, there was a demand for a vacuum necessary for horror films, because that's what kids went and saw, that and biker things, you know, crazy films like that. And so if you could make that, at least you could play somewhere and hopefully make a second film. And so that was the idea. It was just to make something that would get things rolling, and it seemed to have worked.
And it was Sam who directly approached you for Within the Woods?
Yes. That was kind of our acid test. Sam had only been making comedies of the Three Stooges vein, very silly kind of slapstick things, and he needed to show potential investors that he could tell a story and scare people. So that was Within the Woods, about a half hour little horror film, kind of a sketch of Evil Dead. It dealt with a different North American Indian mythology rather than ancient Sumerian, but pretty much kind of the same thing. It possesses people, turns you against them, and you have to kill them.
Yeah, and you did all of, because Bruce becomes the monster in that one, right? So you did all of his effects on that?
Yes, okay. Yes. In that one, one of his eyes has popped out and is hanging on his cheek by the optic nerve.
Yeah.
And he's all scarred up, and that was fun. Poor Bruce, though, he suffered. He wore the whole makeup all that weekend, and your body kind of, in mind, rejected after a while. It's you need to get out of it.
Yeah, I believe he called it the latex point or something like that.
That's just it, yeah.
And then, obviously, Evil Dead 1 comes about when they've raised the money off Within the Woods. What was the biggest challenges about working at that sort of remote location, and how much was decided with the makeup and prepared before you left for Tennessee, and then how much was sort of done on the fly when you got down there?
Almost all of it was done on the fly. I had about 3 weeks with the script before we were down there filming. And which was enough time to, I did do a couple of face casts one Saturday at Sam's parents' home basement of the ladies and Hal. Bruce didn't require one.
Right.
And then I made the cover of the book and bound it and drew in it up at there down in Tennessee when we were filming. And then so I also had time to kind of figure out how I was going to do things and buy the appropriate supplies, latex, rubber, and some foam kits, foam rubber model kit stuff. And, you know, plaster and hydrocal and aluminum foil and tubes and lots of Karo syrup and food coloring and instant coffee for the blood and just everything I could think of that I might possibly need.
And you took all that down beforehand and then sort of added to it, I would imagine, once you got there.
Yeah, and the schedule, you know, wasn't really prepared until we got there. So I would pretty much be told what we were going to shoot the next day, and I'd stay up all night preparing it. And then I'd have to wake the actors up about 4 or 5 hours beforehand and then start putting them in the makeup. Because that was a whole build-up process.
Right. And do you think that there were more challenges, or what were the specific challenges when it came to working in somewhere like Tennessee rather than if they had stayed home and sort of done it in Michigan?
Well, it was the weather particularly. It was one of those, the weather gods of the movies having their good time with us, because we went down to, we knew we were going to be filming starting in, I think around the first week of November, and be down there for several weeks, taking us into winter. And so we thought, well, the further south we go, the warmer it will be, logic would follow. And it turned out that Michigan had one of the mildest, warmest winters in years, and Tennessee, inversely, had one of the coldest. So, yeah, you can't win. But I also think that maybe there was a strategy that, you know, if you get this cast and crew and take them out in the middle of nowhere and they're just, nobody's got a car, that maybe you've got it like your captive film audience, your captive cast and crew, and that way they can't run away. If you're in Michigan, you can just take off and hopefully your family would defend you. But but it got done. But, you know, it was actually a very cool set. It was a lot like, you know, unsupervised summer camp.
Right.
And there weren't, you know, other than some discomfort with the makeup and stuff and the grueling schedule, but, gee, no divas, no egos, no fights. People got along. It was invigorating to work on. And everybody was just beat and dragging the whole time, but all the, you know, work and attention definitely went to putting it on the screen. And it was an amazing time. Cause, you know, it was neat because we all believed in Sam, and sure enough, he made us all look really good.
Yeah, I mean, it's
very appreciative.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the finished product is absolutely fantastic and still obviously going strong. No, it's nice you said that. I was going to ask about the sort of the atmosphere on set, because when I spoke to Hal at the Philadelphia Comic Con, he obviously, being a horror movie fan at the time, was describing his awe of being in the makeup chair. And I wondered whether some took to makeup better than others, or whether everyone just kind of muscled through and got on with it.
It varied. Hal had seen, I was a teenage werewolf when he was a kid, and really thought the process of putting on makeup was really interesting. And so when I'm putting him in dog makeup for Evil Dead, he had this revelation that, oh, it's come full circle. But the girls were a different thing because, you know, I described the process, you know, of how we had to make these things and the molds and all that. And but it turned out, I'm pretty sure all of them, at least to some extent, were fairly claustrophobic. And so wearing this is really grueling, even under best conditions, because it takes hours. Like the first makeup I did on Betsy was like 5 hours. Hmm. I woke her up, she lay down on a cot, went back to sleep, and when she wakes up 5 hours later, you know, her face is filled with veins and stuff. It was the first makeup to find.
Yeah.
But when she did her performance, and it was just at dawn, we were just starting to lose our darkness, she gets dragged out of the cabin. It's a shot that's in the film. And that was the first shot in the film where we did something scary, you know, where everything else was fairly prosaic, you know, coming to the cabin stuff. We shot roughly in, you know, order.
Yeah.
In sequential order. And so when she did that, that was like the crew was stunned because it was so, she had sold it so well. And with her screeching and writhing and, you know, rhythms, and, you know, it was just amazing. But poor Betsy just suffered because she had, you know, these contact lenses and really extensive makeup. And she was wearing an appliance that I'd made. I'd made a casting of the face of a mannequin that Sam had bought. And because we were kind of making her the idealized, you know, plastic girl. To give everybody kind of a psychological twist to their possession. Scotty turns into a dog because he betrays his best friend. Ellen is just a foul mood, so we turned her into kind of the witch, the possessed demon thing. Makeup borrowed from, you know, the Exorcist. And then Shelley wound up with the veins, the black veins radiating out of her eyes makeup that I originally had done for Betsy.
Right.
But, you know, it was difficult, but, boy, they were troopers, and they all made it look good. And I think, like the Three Stooges say, the pain goes away on payday.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And what was your personal favorite makeup to do, either to do or, in fact, how it looks in the finished film?
You know, the Ellen's Cheryl makeup, I think, just really clicks for me. And there wasn't much attention paid to continuity, and so it kind of changes over almost from shot to shot. But even that, our minds kind of rationalize it in the madness that is the Evil Dead demons, you know, and that you can just see these changes and like that. But I like my contributions, like the multicolored vials that they leak out. That was my idea. I was kind of thinking, gee, what about our ratings? I mean, you know, we never discussed ratings.
Yeah.
I just said, Sam, do you want, you know, if you want show somebody getting stabbed, do you have the knife stuck in their back and somebody, you know, with their back to the camera, their back away from the camera, you come up behind them with the knife, you drop the real one and then pretend you've stabbed them with the fake one, then they turn around, you know, you do that kind of cheat. Or do you want to see the knife go into it? And he said, well, if you can show the knife going into it, show that, you know. And so that's kind of the way I took it. And then after a while, when we're, you know, starting to get into where there's lots of blood leaking and all this and puking and stuff, I thought, let's make it all different colors. And because that way it suggests that the physiology has changed somehow.
Yeah.
And it's really not human or whatever. And so I went with that. We used milk and various colors of, you know, you get four colors in your pack of food coloring, so we could mix that up and, you know, have them puke carrots and milk and just different colored liquids.
I think it means that the effect that that has is that when Bruce finally at the very end gets hit with that big sort of blob of brain and blood and skull and whatever that he gets hit with when he's down on the floor at the very end, because that is so red and so rich and whatever, it's almost jarring again. You've been through all this incredible excess and amazing graphical things, and then there's this one last kind of punch to his face, and it's this rich red color. It's sort of really effective after all the different colors, like you've been saying.
That finale was really interesting because Sam's original idea, as he explained it to me, was he wanted me to build like balloon people and have filled up the balloons with smoke, and then they would leak out, you know, as in their clothing.
Right.
And all I could think of is there'll be some smart aleck in the theater and he'll blow raspberries. You familiar with that term? It sounds like a fart noise that you make with your hands.
Mm-hmm.
And, it will be, that'll get a big laugh, and then he or someone else from that theater will do it the next time when they take friends and, hey, wait for this, you know.
Yeah.
And off it'll go, and it'll be known as the fart movie. And I wanted to, I'm a huge fan of stop motion animation, and I thought of, how about taking that, and in the George Cal, The Time Machine with Rod Taylor. At the very end, he's trying to get his time machine out of the temple there, and he's attacked by Morlocks. He kicks one, killing it, breaking its neck, and it falls against the rocks. He jumps into the time machine, pushes it forward, and then as he's recovering, he looks over and sees this rapid, you know, this time-lapse decomposition of the Morlock. It's just like one or two shots, really effective.
Huh.
But I thought, it's done clay over a skeleton and was shot frame by frame. And I thought, let's turn that into a sequence where, you know, they throw the book into the fire and then they... And I did a series of 12 drawings and sand-like those. And he had an animator in mind, a co-friend, a friend of his, a guy named Bart Pierce. And months later, we hooked up and hit it off. But when we came up to that finale sequence, I had this idea from King Kong where it's where Fay Wray is in the tree and Kong knocks the tree down during the T-Rex fight.
Yeah.
And the camera, it's as if it's mounted to the tree, and you see the background, the sky moving up as the tree is falling forward, and the rush of the wind and everything blows her dress up.
Hmm.
And I thought, let's try that, but we'll hook the camera to the front of the Cheryl model, and then we'll have, you know, as the Cheryl model is falling forward, we'll animate it, and then that was my idea for the shot, which we did.
Hmm.
And we put it on a lever that was hooked up to a tire jack with a crank. It was like for trucks. And so with a turn or so of the crank, we could raise and lower it incrementally, which we did. And Bart then had a brilliant idea of when the head, you know, we have the shot of the head falling forward. Then we needed a shot of it crashing.
Hmm.
And so Bart had this idea of turning the camera and pointing it upwards, and then having I built a fake head out of a Revell model plastic skull covered with clay and fashioned to look like the decomposed Ellen face. And it had this, you know, dog food and icky brains and blood and all that stuff inside of it. And then that's on a lever. And when we took our section of floor and turned it upside down at about a 45-degree angle, the center over the camera, so that the head would swing up, hit the floor, and then explode, and then rain down on top of the camera. We put a piece of glass in front of the camera. So instead of just, you know, hitting and going, you know, looking impressive, but just gravity taking it, we had the gravity assist us and give it more of an explosive impact.
Mm.
And then we shot that stuff and handed it off to Sam, and he shot the reaction shot where he puts Bruce and all the blood and glory, lays them down on our piece of floor, and then with a handful of dog food and our food coloring blood, throws it into his face. And then with those three shots put together, it's just Evil Dead Gold. But I'm really glad that I fought for that that stop motion finale. I'm really proud of that. Bart and I did a great job. It was 3 months putting that two and a half minutes together. There's even a couple of shots that we shot and that still exist of snakes and cockroaches being regurgitated out of the skulls' faces right before they finally collapse. But they were deemed too horrifying.
Too horrifying after everything that had just happened.
So I grossed out Sam Raimi.
That's fantastic. No, I was going to bring up the end sequence because every person to a man so far has mentioned that end sequence and just how spectacular it is and how much they like it even now and so on. And, you know, I personally love it. It's sort of unique, I think, in certainly the 80s genre of those sort of horror movies. It's a fantastic sequence. It's really, really good. Thank you for telling us all about that. I was going to ask, when it came to creating the book and the dagger, how much was in the script and how much freedom did you have to sort of design what you liked with that?
The script was very clear about the book. First of all, we never had to look inside it. I mean, people did, but we didn't have, there weren't any descriptions of pages or anything like that. What it was described as is having a cover made out of some kind of animal skin, which I kind of took as like leather, with a few letters from an ancient alphabet on it. And to me, and I was the only one who had seen this film, that's like a description of the book from Equinox.
Right.
Of film just a couple years earlier. Well, I guess done in the 60s and finally released to the theaters, to drive-ins and stuff. And I'd seen it because, of course, it had stop motion in it and was one of the first films by Dennis Muren working on it. And also Jim Danforth and David Allen and all these great guys. Well, anyway, and so I said to Sam, this is a book of evil, right? Yeah, yeah. And I said, well, then it's got to be something that, you know, you look at it and you don't want to pick it up. And at that time, the most disgusting thing I'd ever heard of humans doing to each other was the concentration camps and the death camps and all that stuff, the Nazis. Oh, I hate those guys.
Yeah.
And I remember reading in one of my dad's men's magazines about Ilse Koch, the wife of a commandant. There were some movies made with Dylan Thorne, She Devil of the SS and all that.
Yeah.
Based on her, but the real one was not a buxom blonde. She was a mousy, creepy little lady. But she would have the prisoners skinned and then make lampshades and curtains and book covers and things out of human skin. And I thought, well, you'd need something, a recognizable feature from a human, and I wasn't going to put a schlong on the cover, so a human face seemed ideal.
Yeah.
And, also that it's my face and that's the suffering that this book could be responsible for. And I had castings of Hal Elrich, a mold, and I just put like five or six layers of latex into it and pulled it out when it dried and glued it onto a piece of cardboard, corrugated cardboard, and had some store-bought parchment, which is just dyed paper, thicker dyed paper, and I bound that together with grocery bag paper, a technique I'd learned in kindergarten, I kid you not, that was my cover, that was my book, and then for the first maybe 3 weeks of filming, or while we were down there, in Tennessee, I'd sit around the table after I'd gotten everything else done, and I'd talk with Josh Becker, who's an encyclopedia of film, I would do my drawings, and just because I love to draw, and thought, this at the very least it'll help the actors,
yeah.
You got something cool, and maybe they'll even show it. So I was really trying to bring everything I could to the production. There's a number of, things that special effects that aren't mentioned, like the finale, I kind of came up with that.
Yeah.
And then the Shelley gets stabbed with the dagger, and the dagger skull is bleeding. That was just showed up. I just drilled a hole in the back through the mouth and stuck a tube on the back side. I said, hey, Sam, you can get a close-up of this thing puking blood.
Yeah.
And there it is.
It's fantastic.
Tried to put as much extra and increase my value as much as possible. And I'm really proud of my work.
Oh yeah, I mean it's absolutely fantastic. I mean it's a real experience, and it's made all the more so when you combine your effects and everything with Sam's camera work and those two colliding together. I mean, I wanted to bring up just because it's sort of something that we do with the show. We're big fans of Don Dola's films here in the diner, and we know a lot of those guys in Baltimore. I mentioned in the email. And I know from the documentary Blood, Boobs, and Beasts that Cinemagic was a big help creating the effects for The Evil Dead, or you had some with you or whatever. Do you remember anything in particular that made it into the final film that was sort of influenced by the magazine? Or
I can't remember who made the film. It's R&D Latex, which I got right out of one of the ads there.
Right.
The face casting was definitely, that was the only source I had for face casting. Using alginate and plaster bandages and and plaster and all that. Some exploding, making non-explosive blood hit type of things.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And just kind of that kind of stuff, but it really was essential. And I've got a letter, I think in issue number 3.
Yeah.
Like 3 or 5. But, you know, hey, put more stop motion stories in there. That was the gist of it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And, you said
Ted Raimi has a letter in, I think, issue number 5.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I was just a junkie for stop motion. I wanted to learn more all about it because I had seen King Kong when I was 5, and that flipped me out and had to do that when I grew up.
Yeah, because he exposed sort of the...
It seemed to be an option.
Yeah. No, but he exposed, like, the wire frame within Kong and all that in the magazine and explained all that, right?
Yes, yeah. Well, ball and socket armatures.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's the big deal there. And, you know, it had the featured people like Ernie Farino and John Dodds and all these folks who went on to great careers in film.
Mm. And did you ever, I was going to ask you as well, because obviously you knew the magazine, did you ever get to see any of Don's films later on when he became a filmmaker, and just what did you think of them?
Well, I have several of them now, and I got to meet Don at Horrifying several years ago.
Yeah.
And tell him, give him a big thanks for his magazine, getting me through it. And plus the idea that, well, like I did stop, a rear, Super 8 rear screen stop motion with thanks to his book, you know.
Yeah.
And he had this way of rewinding Super 8 cartridges, which is just brilliant. I never would have figured that out.
Yeah.
But I like his films. I met Ernie Farino, who had animated that the Lemoid, I think, and was a superimposed thing.
At the end of Alien Factor?
Yeah, from Alien Factor. Mm. And yeah, I remember those films, and I, you know, I fortunately didn't see them until much later, but. Yeah, oh gosh, I've got at least 4.
Cool. Well, there's a couple of more questions about sort of what you did afterwards. I was going to say, how did your role change for the sequels? And was there ever sort of mention of you working with Sam, Rob, or Bruce again?
Well, on Evil Dead 2, they gave me the option of doing, there was like plenty of stop motion stuff.
Yeah.
And then there was the makeup stuff. And the makeup stuff was full body suits and really on a scale that I was not used to it all, you know.
Hmm.
Mine was all lone work out of my kitchen kind of thing.
Yeah.
And so I passed on the makeup stuff, and it went to Mark Shostrom and his crew that became, you know, Kurtzman, Nicotero, and Berger. And happy to do that. And the thing was, is my the big sequence that I was gonna do was this Flying Deadite at the end. And it was this big whole Harryhausen sequence where the Flying Deadite comes in and is chase, it attacks all these knights on horseback, and they're throwing spears, and it's got a tail that's slashing at them. And it sees a woman running with a child, and it flies after her, and that's when Ash shows up and blows its brains out.
Right.
But it was a big, you know, the whole Harryhausen sequence. It went on for a bit. And unfortunately, the cameraman, my stop-motion cameraman, a guy named Larry Larson, who really knows his stuff, had prepared a list of do's and don'ts for shooting the background plates. These would be the footage of the actors, of the knights, pretending there's something flying above their heads and swinging and throwing things at it. And then later we would project that up and with front screen or rear screen composite the flying animated Deadite in there.
Mm.
Well, one of the things was don't put dust up in the air because we can't put the thing behind the dust. Best we could do is superimpose it. It would look like a ghost. It wouldn't look right. And Sam, I'm not sure what happened, but we got the impression he took our list as though, you know, it was professionally presented to the producer, but he took it as though it was like stepping on his turf. And he wanted dust up in the air, which is what he did. And unfortunately, none of the footage was useful. We were even prohibited from being on the location that day. And and so the sequence wound up being the thing shows up, it gets its head blown off, and it's gone.
Yeah.
Like, immediately. And that was the reason I did the movie, was to do this whole sequence, because I thought, oh, stop motion, it's the only option for the future. And, you know, I had not known anything about computers or the effect that was going to have. And so I thought, you know, films are going to get more ambitious, and stop motion is going to need to, you know, go even further. And Go Motion was the latest thing at that point to make a way of mechanically putting blurs during the photographic process to help, you know, create more of a realistic thing. Yeah. And I managed to get some blurs into my flying Deadeye. There's even a smile. I built a mechanical head that had screws in the back with little cables attached to 6 points in the mouth and eyes. And by turning a screw, I could actually incrementally make it smile and or frown.
Wow.
And if you watch, study it frame by frame, in one of the profile shots of it flying, in between a wing flap, you can see it smile, see the big grin. Very proud of that, too.
And was that ever completely finished and then just edited out? Or once you saw that there was sort of dust in the air and smoke in the air and so on, there wasn't any point?
Well, there are two shots that were clean enough that we did, but those just weren't put in the film.
Oh, right. Okay.
And it was hovering over the guys, and it was swinging up, you know, and they're swinging at it, and it's swinging down at them. And there was something else that we shot, but I can't remember what.
And it's never been sort of dug out and put on any of the DVDs or anything?
I'd love to see it. Hard work. But boy, it was really. There was another shot where he wanted two flying Deadeyes hovering in the distance, and he wanted the camera to pan down. The thing was, is there were no clouds in the sky, so that there was nothing to register the flying Deadeyes to during the pan.
Yeah,
and so I had to judge the little bits of the ground and continue that speed. It was really complicated. And it looked awful.
Right, okay. And were you surprised then when they went on and did Army of Darkness, obviously some years later, and there was all the sort of stop-motion skeletons and so on? I mean, were you involved in any of that, or...?
No, that was a guy named Peter Kleinow who would take on these huge, crazy stop-motion jobs. He did the Gremlins films, and there's a shot where, like, there's a street full of gremlins, and they're all stop motion. Well, one guy, Peter, animated all those guys.
Wow.
Amazing. And so he did all these crowd scenes of skeletons.
Yeah.
Stuff. Okay. And he's like a legend.
But the book changes in each movie, right? But that was still all you? You still worked on the book?
I created the books for number one and two. Never charged them a dime for use of those, by the way. I thought that was very generous of me.
Yeah,
and
very generous.
Number three, they hadn't returned the books. They were my props that they were supposed to have during number two. So they hired me to come up with another number two book, which I did. And I called them up like 3 months later because I hadn't gotten my check for it. And he said, oh, yeah, sorry about that. And they sent it right off. But we've got, because as soon as I talked to you, the art director came in, we were talking about the book, and he said, well, remember, Ash has to get sucked into the book, so you need to make it bigger. And so they just went ahead, and their art director came up with that. I didn't hate the cover for it, but, you know, what do you do?
Yeah, but I mean, of course, because the book in the flashback at the beginning is obviously different to the book that they fight with later on in the graveyard.
Well, the way I see it is the skin on the books doesn't last all that long, so it gets recovered every once in a while.
I think it's fascinating. The one of the most fascinating things is that it's Hal's, the original book is Hal's face wrapped around it. I mean, that was a bit of information I'd never heard. It's almost like finding out that, you know, Shatner's face was used for the Michael Myers mask, you know?
Oh, great, yeah.
Yeah, and lastly was just, I see recently you've done a handful of acting roles on IMDb, and I just wondered, A, how they came about, and also you said about The West Wing.
Yeah, I've been acting in movies, maybe half a dozen of them so far, and for the most part, if you want to make sure your movie is never released, by all means, hire me to be in it.
Really?
I worked on one called The Dread, which isn't actually a bad film. We shot that in Kalamazoo. Alan Sandweiss is in it, and Sally Pressman, who went on to be a notable star in a TV show called Army Wives and has made a couple of other films.
Right.
And it's a psychological thriller with some supernatural things in it, and I played a psychologist in it, and... Boy, but it's yeah, I'm not sure it'll ever get released. I hear it was released in Australia, and on the IMDb page, there's somebody reviewed it as craptastic.
Oh, no.
Well, I'll check. And then I did one called Dog in Jackson, Michigan, where it's about two kind of redneck brothers who have a third brother who's a mutant, and they use him as their protection for their junkyard because he's a beast. And I played a small part of a homeless person and possibly alcoholic issues walking through their junkyard, and I get trounced by the thing.
Oh,
and
wow.
That one hasn't been released either. And but however, I did run into a guy named Ryan Mead, and he's a young gung-ho filmmaker, and he's put me in some films and actually gotten those out. I mean, he's distributing them himself.
Yeah.
But one called 100 Miles to Midnight, and it's an anthology film. These two guys have to go 100 miles to get their pot by midnight if a dealer leaves. So at the driving there, they're telling stories. And I'm in one called WWJD, where I play the super religious father who keeps his beautiful daughter locked up in a dog cage in the basement, feeding her raw steak covered with human blood for a very good reason.
Right.
And Ryan's also making, we're still putting the finishing touches on it. We should have it done and released or out next spring. It's a documentary about me called Invaluable, a really pretentious name. But it's we've had some marvelous cooperation from the cast of Evil Dead, and we've gone back and interviewed like the unsung heroes of Evil Dead, and we're gonna have an extra disc with the full interviews and such on that.
Oh wow!
Both guys, so I'm very excited about that. I'm gonna make it an Evil Dead document as much as a documentary about me and my artwork and film and other crazy things.
That's fantastic. And when is that planned to come out?
We're looking at next spring. We're planning a trip down to Tennessee right now to go revisit the locations and maybe some of the folks that we stumbled across. And,
oh, fantastic.
Yeah, it's kind of neat. I'm looking forward to it.
That's going to be great. I mean, that's going to be because I think that, you know, with the it's just that there's, you know, there's a lot out there about the films. But I think that because there's this continued interest, rather, anything extra to that and anything that's sort of about, you know, about yourself and about the cast members who don't necessarily always get the limelight, that's now the fascinating areas. That's where people want to find out more stuff. And because I know what you said about the title of the movie, but from everything that is in Evil Dead, and I, you know, repeat what I said earlier, it's as much the effects as anything else in that movie that make it. And it's just fantastic. You wanted me to say about the West Wing?
Yeah, I met the prop master of Evil Dead 2 was Blanche Sindelar, and years later she worked on the West Wing TV series, and about the White House and everything.
Yeah.
And when the Evil Dead 2 Anchor Bay Book of the Dead was being put together, and they wanted me to do that book as well, the cover and illustrations.
Hmm.
I needed some photographic stuff for the insides as well. So I called my friend Tony Elwood, who was one of the prop makers on the prop maker for Evil Dead 2, and Blanche Sindelar, who was the prop master, and because I knew they had photos. And I got in touch with Blanche, and, we were friendly back then. Looked her up and kind of hit it off. I went out to visit her, and she was working on West Wing. It was the seventh season, and I got to hang around the Warner Brothers set for a couple of weeks. It was a riot. Saw Kirk Douglas and Richard Dreyfuss's stand-in for, the Big Boat Turning Over movie. Poseidon. And,
oh, yes.
But I got to watch the process for a couple of weeks. It was great. Well, along the way, hey, you want to be an extra? And, oh, hell yeah. So they get suited up, and there's a scene where Senator Vinnick, played by Alan Alda, is coming out of the parking lot elevator, which they built. It's just a door.
Yeah.
And he's mobbed by reporters. I'm with two reporters, and I'm carrying a camera. And the two reporters say, Senator Vinnick, Santos, it's the Jimmy Smits character, his the candidate he's running against him for president. Santos is re-upping into the reserves. Is that just a political gimmick? And Alan Alda stops and says, gimmick? No, that's his patriotic duty. And when and after I'm elected, I hope he'll continue to do his patriotic duty. And everybody laughs. And this is like the pre-title little, you know, scene. And during the scene, you can see me silhouetted running across the thing with the camera for 35 frames. I'm a blur. And then when the shot of the two people, the two reporters, male and female, asking the question, that's my elbow holding the camera in the upper right side. So it was like the perfect, you know, I'm a blur and that's my elbow. That's my that's my West Wing fame.
Excellent.
And it was a lot of fun. There was another scene that I made a bunch of signs for, you know, political rally kind of things.
Yeah.
And that, you know, just part of fun sitting there all day and watching things. Well, I watched Tim Matheson go by. He directed one of the episodes and I heard he was coming. So I'm just hanging by the door and he's talking to somebody.
Yeah.
It was kind of neat. I love that whole buzz thing.
Oh, definitely. And he's gone on to do some episodes of Burn Notice with Bruce Campbell and things in recent years.
Yeah, right. Got blown up real good, didn't he?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Low in the last series. Yeah, I didn't know whether you watched the series or not or whatever. But, yeah, he got blown up by Fiona, so that was fantastic. Although it does mean that they can't bring him back again.
Drama.
Sorry?
And his death is at the center of this season's drama.
Completely.
That Sam Axe movie Bruce did, he was telling us it had so many viewers. Had it been a pilot, he'd have his own show right now.
Yeah, it did really, really well.
And of course, there's the Evil Dead reboot, which I'm holding out very high hopes for. I think it's going to surprise everybody.
Yeah?
And I think it's going to go carry things a little too far. I'm hoping that.
Okay. Well, the reboot or the remake or whatever, it's obviously it's gonna cause a lot of discussion amongst fans until they finally
see it. It's a new set of kids dealing with the strange book, and I think that's we got a new psycho director to take care of this.
Yeah.
Betty Alvarez is gonna kick.
Yeah. No, I've sort of followed up on it. I'm not as skeptical as I have been about other remakes, but I mean, I think that my only issue whenever it comes to things like this is that they call them the same name and yet it's a different story. And I know why they do it, cause it sells it and whatever, but the sometimes you want to leave The Evil Dead as The Evil Dead and have, you know, if you're going to do a new story with new people, have it something else. You know what I mean?
I understand. Yes.
That's the only thing. And that's just us being pernickety fanboys.
You know, from where I'm sitting, I can't lose. I know it's going to be great.
Right.
But, you know, if it sucks, they'll go, yeah, well, you know, you're trying to remake a classic.
Yeah.
And if it's great, they'll go, yes, but you're standing on the shoulders of giants. And either way, me and the gang will all get invited to a lot more conventions for that year or so after it opens. And, just because what did you think of it? You know, our reviews but I think they're going to tap right into the Evil Dead in all of us with that.
I hope so. I do hope so. And have you been approached to do the book or anything like that?
Yeah, but the problem was it's still a relatively a low budget movie, and I have a thing about work for hire, and that, you know, if someone's going to make a lot of money, I want to be able to share in that, and it just wasn't happened. But they have my complete blessing. They're going to come up with their own book and all that, and I know it's going to be great. They're going for a realistic version of things.
Yeah.
And so it's not going to be laughs and giggles and Three Stooges stuff. It's going to be pretty hardcore and really scary. I think it's going to shake people up. I'm looking forward to it.
Excellent. Well, look, thank you ever so much, Tom, for talking to us today. It's been, well, as I said, it's been an absolute thrill. I've loved this movie for so many years. I can't quite believe all the people I've got to speak to this year. And thank you for sharing your stories and being on the show. It's been fantastic to talk.
It's been a pleasure, John. Thank you.
Thank you very much, and keep in touch via Facebook. And when the documentary comes out, we'd love to talk to you about it again, or maybe something like that when that comes out.
Let's do that. I'll hold you to it. Thank you.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye.
Hi, I'm Steven Seagal. That's right, Steven Seagal. And for the past 40 years, in between barbecue and oxen and roasting boar for my insatiable appetite, I never miss an episode of Dr. Action and the Kick-Ass Kid commentaries. Ain't that right, Johnny?
Hi, I'm Dr. Action.
Hi, and I'm the Kick-Ass Kid.
When I'm not watching action films, I'm usually polishing my gun while looking at a back.
And when I'm not watching action films, I'm normally outside with a harpoon killing puppies.
But usually you can find us both watching 80s, 90s action films. You could follow us on Twitter, Dr. Action Kick-Ass.
You can find us on our main page, which is dractionkickass.blogspot.com.
You can also find us on iTunes and TalkShoe.
Yes, every week we do a commentary on an 80s and 90s action classic, and where we can, we also provide the film so that you can watch along with it.
This podcast explodes.
Hey, where's that baby mama at? I gotta tase somebody.
There are men, and then there are second unit podcast men. Podcast you've just been listening to is part of the Second Unit Podcast Network. Find all of our shows at 2upn.blogspot.com or on Facebook under the Second Unit Podcast Network. Our fantastic list of shows include Drunk on VHS, We Came from the Basement, No Budget Nightmares, The After Movie Diner, Dr. Action and the Kick-Ass Kid, and Bloodbaths and Boomsticks. Take one podcast into the shower. Don't be a blithering idiot, Alan. We can give you the multiple podcast cleansing system all in one place that your hair deserves. Our programming is available across all platforms from iTunes to Podomatic, TalkShoe to Stitcher, so you have absolutely no excuse. Listen today and a free naked person of your choice will be shipped from Thailand to your door in a matter of weeks. The Second Unit Podcast Network, bringing you the action and leaving the boring stuff to the other guys. Bloody hell, who does a girl have to blow around here to get a decent beverage?